Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of She's the Barista. Yeah, hello. It is very great to have you all back, and hello to everyone who is listening for the first time. This podcast is kindly supported by Rancilio Germany. Thank you so much for making this possible. And this week's episode might be one of the most energetic episodes I ever make because I have invited a true coffee legend that is, I think, just a ball of energy. I'm so happy that I have him on the show because I truly have to say that I fell in love with the way that he treats people and he inspires the industry and he inspired me to become so much better at what I do and to push the boundaries of what I do. He also is a true spokesman for coffee in the bar scene, and he combines those two worlds with elegance and with a lot of flair and charm. But before I go on just talking about him, let's welcome my old friend. And here he is. I am so happy. Hello, Martin.
Hi, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are in this beautiful world.
Oh, I'm so, so happy to actually chat with you, to finally have you as a podcast guest. And I have 1,000 questions, seriously, and I'm so happy to hear all of the stories. and to be honest, my first question is quite boring, but not really. It's I just really want to ask you how you are in the moment. And maybe you can tell our listeners a little bit where you are, so they already like have a little bit of a guess where you're working and stuff.
Thank you, Nicole. Thanks for having me. It's amazing to connect this way because, you know, we are miles away from each other. I am currently based in sunny Australia, where you used to live as well. And I guess that's why we know each other even more. So, yeah, I'm in Sydney at the moment. It's a beautiful morning here and I'm getting ready for my daily work, which is basically from morning till night. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You work in a bar that works as a coffee shop and like as a bridging shop, I would say, that is a bar and a coffee shop.
Yeah, correct. The bridging word is very important. We decided to open last year, just before lockdown, a new concept called Sammy Junior, which mm-hmm. is a sister venue of our cocktail bar, maybe Sammy, where we already had a great name and great, you know, name in the market and success in terms of the cocktails. So we were thinking, okay, how we can bring those cocktails closer to the people during the day and how we can bridge the gap between the role of coffee and cocktails. And that's where the idea for Sammy Junior, the sister venue, came up. And that's a place where basically we open at 7 a.m. and, you know, close at late at night, and we do cocktails straight away from like a morning time and so coffee till late.
Yeah. So let's be honest, Martin. Do you have to work the morning shift there?
So unfortunately, with the current situation in Australia and not enough work power, and because it's my own business and it's not about the trust, it's really about like the quality controlling. Last 4 months, so from September till December, till we got in the Christmas period, I was there every morning, usually from 6:30, and then I would be leaving at night. So my usual week from September last year till Christmas was around 75 hours, and I don't want to complain because it is what it is when you have your own business. And then we have another businesses in the city. Now, it's got a little bit better after Christmas period. We got some new people. And of course, the city is not as busy as it used to be. So I have a little bit of time in the morning. But yet still, I'm doing things like, you know, this beautiful podcast with you. Or I have to do something, you know, online on my laptop from home. But in physical form, I have to put my apron on always around 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, give a break to the morning shift, send them home. And then I'm carrying on with the opening.
Mm. Wow, I think we're already talking so much about like your current job. And I mean, I've been to Sydney and I had the pleasure to see one of your shops that I definitely want to talk about later on. But maybe it's good if we start at the beginning.
Yeah.
Because you do have such an interesting history. And I remember the first time that we both met, I think, I'm not quite sure if it was 2016. I think it was, and it was for a event in Berlin, which is funny because I just had the Brewers Cup champion on, Matt
Okay.
Linton, and we also met at this collab. This collab in Berlin was magical because I met so many people, I made so many
Yeah.
connections, and you were one of the talkers. And at that time, you talked about customer service as you were working currently at the Savoy in London.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's been a long time ago. Long time
Yeah.
ago.
Yeah. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about your history? I mean, when did Martin
Yeah.
Hudak start? How did he end up in the Savoy? And how did you start doing like coffee cocktails?
I make it very easy for you because I don't want to go too much into history. But like every young person, I would say, aspiring to become someone and it didn't work out, probably end up in hospitality. And that's usually the story of, that's almost everyone in hospitality. So I aspire to be artists, to be in the musicals, theaters, cinemas. Always was around the, performance of sort, try to be singer, dancer, and things like that, but didn't work out. So of course my parents were like, ah, you have to go to culinary school, you learn languages, and then you travel around the world. And I was like, oh cool, yeah, sure, that's gonna work. So yeah, during my studies, I was at the age of 15, 16, I discovered a passion not only for cooking and hospitality, but as well for coffee and cocktails respectively. And then yeah, I started my first barista competitions and cocktail competitions. But again, it was during the school, so it was very like kind of naive world. You think you are the best because you win this competition amongst the youngsters. But then reality came up. When I graduated at the age of like 18, 19, I graduated and I got my real job in a coffee shop. And that's where I realized that no one really gives a shit about what I think about espresso, filter coffee, or iced coffee. It's a real guest who dictates the trends and the style and what they want. So it was interesting. I've been working in a local coffee shop in my first job ever in my hometown for 5 years. And where I'm coming from, it's not like, let's say, like a capital city, like, New York or London or Berlin. It was like little hometown, somewhere in the eastern part of Slovakia where I'm from. But I had always bigger dreams and bigger aspirations. So I traveled around the world. I attend every single competition to just see other people, what they do and how they do. And yeah, during that time in the cafe, I did lots of barista competitions or coffee and good spirit competitions. And it's already there in that young age. I've been already 4 times in the Slovakian finals, and I made it already 2 times to the world finals. In 2014 in Melbourne, in MICE, with Coffee and Good Spirit, I became second in the world and was beaten by Matt Perger from St. Eli from Barista Lab. And then, yeah, 2013, year before, I was in France, in Nice, and I became sixth in the world. So I already was around the community and the competitions, already was out there, but I was still in Slovakia. And people didn't even know where is Slovakia. So it was kind of like not disadvantage, but I start feeling like, okay, it is a bit small for me at the moment, this country. And I have to get out to challenge myself. You know what I mean? Like for example, maybe you're one of the best in Europe, but if you want to challenge yourself, and everyone's talking about Australians, how amazing they are with the coffee, maybe you want to come here for a little bit and see what is all the fuss about. And it was the same with me. Everyone's talking about London, 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 and cocktail bars and cocktails and history. So I moved to London in 2000, 2000, wow, 2014. Yeah, 10th of December 2014. I remember that like today. And I got a job by lack of coincidence and I don't know, star signs. And I got a job at the Savoy at the American Bar, which is the longest surviving American bar in the world, 130 years of history. The first 5-star hotel back in 1889. We're talking about historical place where Frank Sinatra, Winston Churchill, Marilyn Monroe, Greta Garbo, Coco Chanel, all these famous people used to be. And even nowadays, they are still famous people. Royal family, etc. So I was there as a senior bartender, carrying the legacy on my shoulders and representing the history. And while I was there for 4 years, I learned a lot, not only about the cocktails and coffee, but most of all, I learned a lot about hospitality and customer service. And that's the most important lesson I got in London. That is not just necessarily the beverage itself, but it's all this environment and experience you can give to your guest. And one of the advantages to work for such an iconic place is that many people invite you, to go around the world, do talks, do guest shifts, etc. So In 2016, as you said, I've been invited to Germany, which I've been before like a few times, but I knew the coffee community is great, but I wasn't sure how barista's gonna be interested in listening hospitality aspect of everything. So I did a master class there, then I did like this little private training, like a coaching how to serve people. And yeah, that's the time I think when I met you.
So I think your time at the Savoy was very, I think it was very important for the DNA of the bartender that you are right now, because
Oh,
you
yeah.
have this very certain kind of flair. You have this, like, you are, for me, you are as if you would be coming out of the 20s and 30s. You're like a perfect gentleman. You know
Thank
all the
you.
rules. Like, you have this talent of making a person feel like the most important person in the room, but you do this
Wow.
to every single person. What was it? Was there like a point where it's just switched and you're like, ah, this is what I think is good? Because there's so many people that never get there. There's so many people that I am taking you as an example, wherever I go and be like, what would Martin do? How would Martin approach these people? Because you are, for me, this person who has shown me, you were my switch for customer service. I mean,
Wow.
obviously also was like my experience in Australia and like working there, and it's a very different it's a very different approach to like the European and especially the German, like, yeah, what do you want?
Yeah,
But I will
that's
never,
amazing.
yeah, I will never forget how you treated me every single time I came in this bar, and then looking around, and then I saw you did this to everyone, and I was like, I was blown away.
Wow. I mean, yeah, thank you. I guess it is something what you can learn. I guess it is something what you can like practice to be better, but as well, it's kind of as well like personality thing and kind of where you're coming from. In London, I learned a lot about etiquette and how to serve people and how to become a gentleman. Let's be honest, it was the first time when I worked at a 5-star hotel, so I had to shave every day, wear a beautiful suit and tie my tie and use very nice, refined language and use the steps. I've been serving people who are, 3 times older than me, people who mean something, who owns the world, the royal family, people who are, famous or important, people who are less important, maybe who are not that famous, people from industry. So what I learned is it doesn't matter if you're serving a Hollywood star or you're serving some, bartender who came for the first time to your bar and cannot afford really to be there. You should always treat them, the way they would like to be treated. Because people always saying, oh, treat the others as you would like to be treated, but that's bullshit because I want to be treated differently than you want to be treated. So I would like to say that that normal saying goes, treat others as you want to be treated is wrong. We should treat others as they want to be treated. And I think that's very important where you as a person, rather than having the enormous knowledge about classic drinks and homemade ingredients and techniques, you should rather have a knowledge of how to utilize your empathy, your human skills and senses to see how those people feel, where they're coming from, what they want, what are the expectations, and who really they are. And if you understand them as a human beings, then you can offer them really what they want, the way they want it. And then you really give them the best experience ever. And that's what I do every single time with every single guest. I don't specify, ah, this is the best female barista of Germany. And ah, this is the most richest guy from the property sales. No, I treat them like a human beings and treat them the way they feel. And I feel their energy. And I think it's something what I have as a human being. Like I have this connection and that really helped me to create memorable experiences for my guests. I believe so.
I think it takes a lot of confidence to approach people that way that you do. I mean, obviously you thought about it a lot, but it still takes, like, there's this side where you can study people to the amount where, like, I think I know exactly what this person wants, but you still put on quite a show in wherever people meet you. It's a convention, it's a championship, it's your bar, it's a cafe. How?
Yeah.
It's a question because I get that asked a lot of times, and I don't really know, because people ask me, you're a very confident person. And I'm like, I don't know. I think there's a lot of doubt that I have against myself, and there's a lot of situations where I think I'm not very confident. What do you say? Where did you get this confidence from to approach people and to be so outgoing about it?
Yeah, I love that. You know what? Many people ask me the same because they see me really like that kind of outgoing, confident, strong guy. You know, probably the same as you, right? Like we are out there and we are like so, you know, like outgoing and strong and opinionated but it is something what you have to build. And this has nothing to do with ego or selfishness, right? Like there are two different things. Like there is a healthy ego and there is a bad ego. I saw many people, and even myself in the past, you know, winning the championship of any kind, you know, bartender competition, barista competition, winning the title of best bartender in the world. Like those things are good and bad. And it really depends how you're going to look at those things, you know, because there are many champions or world champions who won and they said, okay, that's it. I'll have a title and I can just relax, right? I think that the quote I'm going to say now, and I think I made this quote up the other day. I was telling to my team, confidence is the enemy of the comfort. You know, like if you are way too confident, you know, you become like just too relaxed about yourself. You still have to doubt yourself. You still have to doubt what you're doing, the way you're doing. You cannot be always too confident because then you don't progress. And confidence is a great tool to show your guests that they can rely on you and trust you. You know what I mean? That's why we have to be confident in our workplace, because otherwise, how we can, you know, persuade and convince our guests that, you know, they're in the right place and they can trust us with our taste buds and knowledge. Imagine having a bartender or barista who are not sure about themselves and not sure about what they're doing. How would you feel about it as a customer, right? So we have to put up this show out there, and we have to show them that how strong we are and how they can rely on us. But all of that show has to be really supportive of sort of experience, knowledge, and you know, like for me, the best way how to build confidence was competition. You know, I competed for 7 years in Coffee and Good Spirit, you know what I mean? I've been 6 times in nationals and 4 times in the world finals, still I got a title. And all of those fails, you know, I don't call them fails because they're learning curves, you know. All of these little steps build up my confidence, because as many times as I lost, you know, and I felt humiliated and I felt like, oh, this and that, I think that helped me to, you know, just stand up and go on, because I think that's what I recommend to every young bartender, barista, or hospitality person. Do competitions, socialize, go out there. And if you don't like to socialize, then probably you are in the wrong business, because hospitality is highly sociable job. You have to talk to people. You have to put smile on. You have to have this energy, and you have to be confident. Because if you are shy, you know, and if you are a close person, well, I have few colleagues like that. But knowing that, I give them a job where they feel comfortable, right? So if someone is shy person, I want to be alone. Maybe I give them a shift where they're doing a prep, and they are just by themselves, or maybe they are in behind the scenes, or maybe they're doing accounting, or maybe they are in the kitchen. But if I see someone else potential who is like a spokesperson, you know, like to talk, like to be with people, of course, this person gonna be in the first line serving people. So yeah, confidence is wow, it's a great thing to have, but it's hard thing.
I think the most important thing for me was losing, like not
Yeah.
winning a lot of competitions. Like, I don't know. I only won big things, and then, but I competed like 9 times. So there's like lots
Yeah.
of things that I didn't win, like lots of things where I like got really, I was devastated sometimes. I was crying for 3 days straight because I thought
Oh.
I should be so much better by now. This is actually an excellent bridge for the next topic. Because you have competed 7 times. 7 times. What motivated you year after year? Because I do the thing where like I don't win it and I want to win something else. And this is why I'm like hopping between competitions.
Which
But
is great.
you were very focused. You're like, no, I really, really, really want to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, like I mean, I tried latte art and brewer's cup, and with all respect for the baristas who listen, I think it's boring. Sorry, sorry. Compared to coffee cocktails or coffee and food, I felt like more. It's more fun. It's more open, and you know the rules were a bit loose, and even the judges didn't know too much back in time. You know, talking about like 10 years ago. You know,
Not
you brought a
anymore.
dry. Not anymore, right? That's true. But you brought the dry eyes on the stage, and they're like, "Whoa!" You know, someone was throwing a drink or make a ice cube out of coffee. Whoa! You know, it was crazy back in time. Now everyone's doing that, so it's nothing special. Now I wouldn't be able to compete because, oh my God, everything's been done almost. I think the reason why I was still coming back, was sort of my ego. Like one of my first nationals in 2010. I remember I went on the stage as like this Slovakian famous young bartender, right? I went to barista competition. And I was like, I'll show you, you know, how the cocktail should be done. Of course, I was 5 minutes over time and I was disqualified. But I didn't know these things, you know, like read the rules? Like I didn't know you have to have
I
20 minutes,
do.
15 minutes. Well, yeah, you know, but I was like so blinded by my who I am, you know. The year after I went again and like, okay, I'm gonna read the rules. So I was on time, you know, perfect 15 minutes. And I was like, yeah, I'm the winner. And they said, no, you're disqualified. I was like, what you mean? I was like, well, room number 54 point A and B saying there are no liquids on top of the coffee machine.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God. Then I put my espresso on top of the machine, which you know leads to the termination. Like,
Yeah.
who reads the rules? You know, I'm the best bartender in town. Like, fuck off, you know, I don't fucking care. So I was always blinded by that kind of my own bubble and own ego, you know, in early stages. And I was like, okay, baristas in coffee world, I have to find out the way how to crack this code, you know, what's gonna work? So then, yeah, finally I started winning, and I found the formula which is gonna work eventually. But formula is very simple, you know, shut up and follow the rules. So it really gave me this kind of a structure and gave me this kind of a strength to focus on rules rather than being that crazy flamboyant Slovakian guy. And it you know, it taught me a lot because in bartenders competition, you know, can really do whatever you want, just be crazy, right? But in barista competition, it's rules. So those two worlds really combine and kind of build who I am. And the reason why I didn't give up is because, same as you probably, like I know I have it. Like I know I have something to offer. I know I can change the format or I can inspire others. And if I win this competition, it's just a beginning of the journey for rest of the life where I have a title, but I just don't want to put it on a shelf and be like, okay, this is it. With that title, I want to go around the world and show the people how important is coffee cocktails, how important is mixology in coffee shops, and how important is a coffee in a cocktail bar. And that's, you know, the journey I am right now on.
Why would you say it's like coffee and good spirits? Why is it for you the funnest competition?
Oh, you can mix alcohol with coffee. How cool is that?
I think the
And
flair points. I love that you
yeah.
get points for flair and for commercial applicability. Imagine that for barista.
Yeah, right? Because like it's more about like as well, it's like this extra point of what we do, you know, how much has the focus on a customer guest service, how much you can impact the whole environment and service and ambience and atmosphere. I think it's like the closest things to the bar from the coffee perspective. And I think that's something what we should as a baristas and coffee shop owner consider how we can create similar ambience and atmosphere and approach as you would have it in cocktail bars.
So in the moment we're talking still a little bit more about the life that you had in Europe because you
Yeah.
won you oh, we didn't say that yet. You won the World Coffee and Good Spirits Championship in 2017 in Budapest.
Yeah.
I was there, I've watched it all. You had a
Oh.
great routine about environment and about being
Yeah.
mindful,
Yeah. It was amazing. Wow, what a year it was. Because that same year at the Savoy, we won the best cocktail bar in the world. And best hotel bar in Europe. And that set week before Coffee and Good Spirit in Budapest, I was competing in a world class, which is a bartender competition. And I was in top 10 in UK, in a whole country. And I think I became second or third. So I almost flew to the world finals in Mexico. But week after, I had Coffee and Good Spirits. So it was like two big competitions back to back. The Savoy won that year, and I kind of achieved everything what I wanted in my life in 2017. And then nothing. I felt empty. And it was so scary.
Oh my God. What, but I just quickly before we go on with this, I just have one question. If you had two of those massive competitions, did you use the same drinks?
No way. So different. Everything has to be different. Oh my God. I have to prepare like 10 different cocktails within 2 weeks for different format of competition, different judges, different concepts, outfits, everything. So
Oh
it was
my
really
God.
interesting.
And then you felt empty.
Yeah. So that's the thing, you know, you're always waiting for something in your life. You always see yourself out there to achieve all these goals and how it's gonna be, and then you achieve them. And what's next? I felt like, wow, I'm a world champion. I'm one of the best bartenders there. My bar was the best bar in the world. And like, so what's the purpose of my life? What's the meaning? Like, I always dreamt about it, and I got it now. So I kind of felt like I'm lost. Like, I didn't know what to do next. I didn't feel challenged anymore. You know what I mean? It's not that I thought I'm the best. It's not that I thought I'm the best and there is nothing else to learn. There's, of course, every day something else to learn. But I was like, I need another push. You know, like when I was in 2014 in Slovakia, I was one of the best in Slovakia. I went to London to challenge myself to just find out that I'm pretty much shit and I know nothing. And the same way I felt about London and Europe, and I was like, I have to leave Europe. I have to leave this continent and I have to go somewhere else far, far away. You know, I was between Asia, Australia, US, and I have to challenge myself and see different perspective of customer service and, you know, different, you know, habits they have there and customizations, you know. So I moved to Australia to start from zero again. And it's a country of coffee, as you know. It's a country of so many world champions, and it's a country which is obsessed about coffee topics. So I think it was a great move for me to leave London, and in 2018 I moved to Sydney.
And then just a couple of months later, you already opened maybe Sammy, right? I think it
Yes,
took like
correct.
5 months or 4 months after you moved, and then you were officially
Yeah,
open.
yeah, yeah.
I think my first question is, how did you meet your business partners?
Yeah, I mean, they were on the trip in London, and you know, there are a bunch of happy, crazy Italians, and they went to the Savoy, and I think it was like in June 2017. And they came to the Savoy on like a morning, afternoon time, and they I served them, you know, and they had this kind of opinion about Savoy. Oh, it's such a, you know, fancy place, and everyone is so serious with those white jackets and ties, and everyone is so madam, you know. And they walked there, and I was like, ciao, guys, you know, crazy, you know, and I give them best hospitality. And they were blown away. And they were like, oh my God, who's the guy? Like, look at his energy, look at his hospitality, even at the Savoy. So we kind of clicked straight away. And I was lucky enough in 2017, December, to travel to Australia for a little like a work trip. And I visit their existing bar, maybe Frank. Which is like a pizza, pasta, aperitivo bar. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. You have so much fun, guys. Like, are you really working? Yeah, we're going to the beach. We have so much fun. We earn so much money. It's always sunny here. I was like, what I'm doing? What I'm doing in London, you know? What I'm doing in this grumpy, rainy London? So I returned back. I was like, okay, this is it. I have to move to Australia. I have to do something with the boys. And that's where the idea for maybe Sammy came into our mind. And take inspiration from the Rat Pack and Sammy Davis Jr., very famous, you know, Afro-American singer, you know, who was a Jewish as well and a bit of crippled because he lost his eye. And he was like, kind of like, he said, like, oh, in 60s, 70s, you know, in time of segregation, he's like, what worse can happen? You know, I'm a black Jewish guy with no eye. So, you know, but he made it, you know, he became one of the most famous performers ever with Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. So, kind of, you know, we felt like the same way. We are like, you know, those European experts from nowhere coming to Australia to show you how to do cocktails. Well, let's try.
And you showed them. You really, really showed them because from the outside, it seemed like your the train that you hopped on with your like, I'm winning everything, and you won the world championship, and then you moved to Australia, and then all of a sudden you started just collecting trophies. I think like it was a year. You weren't even open a year, and you're already under the top, under the best bars, 50 best bars in the world, right?
So in that year, 2019, when we just like opened, we got 14 national international awards. It was just madness.
It is
In
mad, yeah.
like in July, like 7 months after we opened, we went to New Orleans for Tales of the Cocktails award ceremony, and we won the best new cocktail bar in the world. Then in October, again, as you said, we listed in 50 best bars in the world, and so on in Australia, best bar team, best menu, best this and that. So it was just surreal. And that year I flew to Shanghai for Drinks Magazine awards, and I won International Bartender of the Year. So I was like, okay, wow,
It's
what's
like,
going
yeah,
on?
royalty. And you got 30 under 30s in the Forbes magazine.
Oh, that's true.
Oh my God. I read that and I'm like, oh no, I'm way too old. That's one that I'll never get.
Yeah, 50 under 50 one day.
So, okay. Well, thank you. I hope you're not taking the next thing that I say negative or something like this, but I have been to a lot of fancy bars, also for research sometimes, you know, like you feel like, oh, I need to get some ideas, and I visit a couple of bars. And I hope you don't mind me saying it, but when I was in maybe semis, you have excellent drinks, amazing drinks, but I think there's a lot of other bars that also have excellent drinks, especially if you're like one of the like top 50 bars. So I think what always made it for me, and I think this is why I find it so important to have you on the show, because you are one of these like true inspirations, and I want to inspire other people to like have this joy of hospitality. Because I think what you made, so like, enchant those people that come to your place, they drink your, I mean, I don't really remember all of the drinks that I drank. I remember a couple, but I remember them because of your delivery. Okay, so one story. One story. We were there, how long is it ago now? 2 years or so? And you gave me the drink Circus Circus, or you gave it to my friend, actually. And let's tell the listeners what the Circus Circus was.
Circus Circus is just it's a magic trick cocktail. So basically, if you think about cocktail itself, it's like old-fashioned sort of Sazerac with a mint liqueur. So it's nothing fancy, it's just a whiskey boozy drink, right? But the way we present it is we come to the table, we have a paper bag which is empty, or you think it's empty, and then we have a fresh mint and fresh chili, and we're telling the guests to pick how much mint and chili they want to have inside the cocktail, place those ingredients, fresh ingredients, inside the paper bag which is empty at that moment. You put ingredients inside, we blow the bag, we burst the bag, and suddenly from the bag appear the tube, which is filled up with your cocktail. And it's kind of like a real magic trick, which we learn how to do it from the YouTube videos, and we apply it in the customers. And what is important, of course, drinks has to be good, as you said, like, and I agree, there are so many bars with so many great drinks these days, same way as there are so many great coffee shops with the coffee. But what I'm always trying to explain to my team in every venue is that's what is the difference between service and hospitality. If we're serving just a drinks, coffee or cocktails, that's a service. People coming as a customers, they're paying for the service and they're receiving the service, a beverage of their choice, right? They're paying for it. Now, if there is our cocktail bar and cocktail bar down the road, what's the difference between us if we're doing the same service and same beverages, equally good? The difference is the hospitality. And that's this extra point where we're coming outside of service and we're providing something for free, something unexpected, something what you remember more than just a beverage itself. And that is called hospitality. That's the moment where they're not customers anymore, but they're becoming a guest. And that's the difference between us or other venues who are trying to be like us or are as good as us. We are offering something extra, where in the end of the day, as you said, you don't even remember what you drank, but you remember the way you were treated, the way you felt about it.
How important do you think it is for, this is something that I have seen a lot lately. So how important is it for baristas and bartenders to actually go out themselves? Because I feel like a lot of the younger generation has no customer experience from being a customer.
True, true
You know what
that.
I mean?
So true. I tell you honestly, I'm sick of every barista after party. We just drink craft beers and maybe Negroni if we are lucky. And we're drinking funky wine and eating hot dogs and being like the super weird kids. And fuck off. Like if you have a barista after party, go to the local cocktail bar, go to the best bar in the city and see what they're doing. Don't stay with a bunch of nerds, and like no offense, because I'm one of them, but get out, I'm sick of it, I'm sick of it. Like every after party made by some brands after a competition is the same shit. It's a craft beer, maybe shot of something, and that's it, Like why are we not showing something else? And I want to encourage every young barista, you finish your shift at 3, 4 o'clock. Clean the machine, go home, take shower, change, take your girlfriend, boyfriend, or go alone, go to the best bar in your city and see what they're doing. Sit at the bar and learn from them. But I'm not trying to say that the bartenders are the best and this and that. It's the same for the bartenders. We are fucking cunts, Bartenders are full of ego, full of themselves, Sometimes it's just show, and no quality. So that's why bartenders should every morning when they wake up on the way to work. Go to the local coffee shop, which is specialty coffee shop, sit down, read the menu, and watch the barista and their workflow. Because baristas, most of the time, are so clean and so organized. It's just insane. You go behind a cocktail bar, it's mess. It's madness. That's what I'm always trying to show the people, that we can learn so much from each other world by going out, as you said. We have to go out there, open your eyes and ears and taste buds and absorb and learn, but not only from best, we can learn from the worst people as well, and then compare, learn.
Exactly. Yeah. I find it so important. I had so many moments where I had to train new staff, and I'm like, what would you do if you're the customer? And they're like, well, I don't know. I'd never go to a coffee shop. I'm like, excuse me, what? You're working in the coffee shop, but you never go and sit in a coffee shop. They're like, no. I'm like, okay. Here's your homework. So a lot of things happened in your life. It was very hectic, I can imagine. Like all of this happened. Like it was like a tornado of like this award, this move, this shop. Obviously, also being uncertain because your shop wasn't on. It's not like a shop that's open 10 years and then Corona hits. I think you were open for 2 years and then Corona hit. You just started this second business, which is quite scary and traumatizing. And you managed it very well. And I think for you to showcase that you've opened a third venue last year is showing your strength and that you know your industry in Sydney and that people understand what you do, which is great. But as we already said a couple of times, it takes a lot of energy. It's quite draining. So
It is.
who are you when you're not a barista and bartender? Who are you when you're at home?
I'm still the same person. Like the people who are close to me, they're always like, Martin, but stop. You are so energetic, always. I never change. I always have this energy in me and positivity and smile. I wake up in the morning and like, okay, what are we gonna do? Where are we going? And it's like, chill, sit down, let's relax. And I'm like, no, let's go out. I'm a very sociable person and I love people. I love society and I love to be out there. Honestly, like I'm people's person. So the way you see my energy when you meet me and the way I talk and when I'm like the way I'm so energetic, it's the way I am in my private life as well. But when I have a day off, which is like one day a week at this time, Sunday usually, I really, really like to read. I read a lot, but not book. related to hospitality pretty much, or book related to cocktails or coffee. I'm trying to disconnect from that world, and I'm reading a lot. I love reading, to be honest, since young age. I love historical things. You know, I go to lots of antique flea shops, flea markets as well. I love Berlin, for example, as well. And I have this, you know, a passion for buying old, ugly stuff, preparing it, you know, and then maybe selling or keeping my possessions. And I like to cook a lot. I'm all about these like little experiments, you know, pickles, sauces, jams, and things. And I love nature. And being in Australia, you know, it's so rewarding. You know, think about beach life and jungle and coast life. So I'm very, very lucky to be here, although I miss mountains like we have in Europe. But yeah, I'm still the way I am, and yeah, I don't switch pretty much, but yeah, I feel happy about it. Like that's just the way I am.
So if you want to go to the mountains, just go to Canberra. They have amazing mountains there. There's even snow. And it's
Really?
not that far away from you. It's like a 3 hour drive. It's like a
Actually,
nice day trip.
I'm going to Canberra on Sunday.
Oh, there you go.
I'm not joking. I'm not joking. I'm going there for one night.
Oh,
Okay,
that's
good to
cute.
know.
So that's my tip, and then I think what I've seen from you is also I think you're practicing a lot of mindfulness, or like you're aware that this, like when you're reading, or these like little breaks, like little pauses, are really, really important for you, because otherwise you might
Break.
run out of energy.
Yeah.
And there is quite a spiritual side to you. I think the
Yeah.
first time that you really let others see this was when you were at the Amazonas, and
Yeah.
you said that you really connected with like the nature, with the forest. Like it was a very important journey for you,
Yes.
and you have also started your own coffee brand, which is called Spiritual Coffee. Can you tell us a
Correct.
little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I am a very spiritual person. And we don't have to go into details of religion or beliefs. You know, each of us, we believe in something else. But I am a person who really believe in lots of energies and positivities and karma and universe and things like that. And you know, first of all, I'm no matter, you know, which religion or God you praise, first of all, try to be a good person. And that's kind of my spiritual part of me, who I am. I really want to be a good person, and share the good vibes and positivity and make this world be a better place. And the trips like that, you know, when I went to Amazon jungle and I spent a few days on the river and in jungle, really makes you realize that how important is the nature and connection to the Mother Earth, and how important it is to be grounded, really, really grounded. Even if you have heads in the clouds and you're flying out there, you always have to come back to your roots. And I think that's what keeps me grounded. And, you know, that's what makes me to stand on the ground and be kind of humble, you know, as well, about where you're coming from and your beliefs. Spiritual Coffee brand was born in 2017, right after championship. I was lucky enough to travel to Chiang Mai, northern part of Thailand. And I went through this kind of spiritual journey there through the like a massage and visiting temples and things like that. And I got this awakening, like I saw these hands holding a coffee beans and kind of like arising in the skies, and I was like, wow, this is a powerful experience. Like coffee is really sometimes spiritual part of our life, because in the world spiritual there is a word called ritual, and I believe the coffee is like everyday ritual we have every day. You know, you wake up, you have your own favorite cup, your own time of the day, your book, your magazine, just yourself, a cup of coffee, and it's so deeply connected to us, who we are. We really need that break of a day, and that's how spiritual coffee was born. And of course, spirit, ritual, coffee, it's all that connected to my life and who I am. So spiritual coffee was born, and it just, yeah, it's about the awareness, it's about being in the present moment, it's about enjoying equally, you know, spirit, coffees, wine, whatever you have, enjoying that moment, the meal of the day with your friends or with yourself. And first of all, you know, love yourself, you know, respect yourself, because how you can share love and positivity and that attitude if you don't share it towards yourself. And that's what I learned recently, that we have to love ourselves first to be able to love others.
Do you roast all the coffee yourself?
Yeah, actually I did yesterday again. So once a week, Roasting in co-working facilities here in Sydney, where you can rent different type of machine from the Loring, the Probat 5, Probat 25, etc. I have my own storage, and yeah, I source my own beans through suppliers. So I'm using pretty different one, or depending on seasonality. And then yeah, I roast for semi junior. We have a house blend that's pretty straightforward. And then on rotation, I have different type of filter coffees. But again, I'm roasting for the last 3 years, but I never said, oh, I'm the roaster or this and that, because there are so many people out there which I respect, you know, and you know, like guys from Ona, for example, you know, like there are some people I admire with so much knowledge. So what I'm doing humbly, I'm trying to do my job best I can, and I'm never gonna brag about it because I'm not there yet. I'm still a student for life, I would say.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, we both know the roasting team from Honor. They're
Oh my gosh.
legends. Yeah, they're incredible.
Crazy.
I would not call myself a roaster after I have worked with them. Yeah, I make coffee brown. Talking about spiritual coffee, you also have released a book recently, and
Yay.
I got it, and I have to tell you, I freaking love it. I have started
Really?
reading it, and I cannot emphasize enough how many books I read in my life about coffee. And the first couple of chapters in your book, I did actually not believe that it's possible, but I've learned so much
No,
about
but for
the
really,
history of coffee. It's like,
wow.
and the way you write it, I think that's a thing though, because I also had Freda Yuan on cupping, and she is not a native speaker. And I read her book and I said it is so understandable and it is so easy to read. I think you have the same thing. I think we as like non-native speakers, we have a way of using the English language. I mean, it doesn't sound
Easier.
stupid, but it's easier to understand, and it's not trying to reinvent the wheel and you're like completely lost. But the way you dive in the topic, maybe I can share a little bit of the chapter, is that you have done an incredible research, and some of your research goes back to like 1740.
Crazy.
French Lemonade years, and they were in war with the apotheker people, and oh, the people that made the medicine, and then the French went to England, and I was fascinated. I love it, Martin. I haven't even gotten
Thank
to the
you.
recipes yet.
Oh my God. Don't do a mistake like everyone else, because there are so many bartenders who are so lazy. They go straight to the recipes because they're one of the best cocktails. But the book is built first history, you know, first learn how to walk, then run. You know what I mean? So it's so important to go chapter by chapter to understand the consequence of how this coffee cocktail world was born and created. So I'm happy you started with that. And like, can you imagine excitement I had when I discovered those things? And then a week after I discovered these things are wrong because there are other older things than that. And I was like, oh my God, what's going on? It's just incredible. And again, I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. You know, there's so many great coffee books out there, and I highly recommend to buy them. You know, I respect people, you know, like, I don't know, you name it, you know, James Hoffman, etc. I respect so many people. So buy those books if you are a nerd about coffee. But this is a topic which no one ever spoke about it. This is a how coffee and alcohol combine and where that happened and why that happened, you know? Oh, I'm so excited.
Yeah, I cannot believe how I had to go back to Jordan. I was reading it, and Jordan bought me the book, and I had to go out of the room where I was reading into his office and say like, it's so good. And then I just
Oh,
went back
thank
out.
you.
Just like, he's like, what is happening?
Wow, thank
Where
you.
can people buy this book? Is it possible for like people in Europe to buy it in the
Of
moment?
course, of course. It's online. You can find the link on my Instagram bio. So my Instagram is martin_hudak. I think you'll see that. But in my bio, there is a link. It's European online website. A friend of mine's running this for me, so he specifically opened eShop just for my book. Very simple to order it within the Europe, in a few days you might have it. Of course, during Christmas we have these, long delays because of COVID and Christmas, but now it should be much easier. So yeah, it's accessible for everyone around the world. It's in English, 200 pages, 40 recipes, and I would say a lot of history.
Oh, a lot of history, great pictures, great
Thank you.
binding. Yeah, it's a very good book.
Thank you.
So just about that, let's go to coffee. Okay. Where was I? I was sorry. Every time I talk about this book, I talked about this book the last time for dinner, and I just completely babbled on and start telling about all of these like lemonade years. And Jordan, she's like, no one cares. I'm like, I care.
So good. I love it. I got you hooked.
Oh. My next question actually is about, because we are at the topic of coffee cocktails,
Yes.
in coffee. So when we talk about coffee or when we approach coffee, we as baristas, we're always trying to like get this balance of like nice acidity, not too much bitterness, sweetness, hopefully as much as there is. And we have like these little basics like don't under extract, don't over extract. So I
Yep.
think it's pretty safe that coffee is something that we can deal with quite well. What do we do, and what's the most important thing when we create a coffee cocktail? How do you approach this?
First of all, create a coffee cocktail for your guests, not for yourself. Okay? That's the biggest mistake where we're starting doing things wrong. Because I love Negroni and I love Mezcal, which is like a smoky tequila. Because I'm a bartender, my palate is used to bitter and boozy stuff. So I'm gonna create a coffee cocktail which is gonna taste like Negroni, smoky, da da da. But you give this to the regular, Karen, and she's gonna be like, oh, what's that? You know what I mean? What's that? I hate it. So first of all, make a coffee cocktails for your guests, for your demographics, for the locations where you are. Whatever works in Australia, in Sydney, in 35 degrees and humidity doesn't mean it's gonna work in a rainy Berlin, for example, or it's gonna work in Los Angeles or Norway, in Copenhagen, or whatever. Focus on your local clientele. I think that's the step number one. Look what your guest wants. Look what are the trends, what are the ingredients, what is the climate, what other coffee shops and bars doing around you. You know what I mean? Like if your best-selling drink is a mojito, then think about it. Okay, how can I make a mojito with coffee? You know what I mean? Things like that. That's where you should start. And then second thing, of course, for bartenders, specifically bartenders, if they're listening now, if you do coffee cocktail, start with a coffee. It's called a coffee cocktail for a reason, right? Don't start with the most premium vodka and Japanese shakers and the best ice. This will come later. Start with the coffee. So always know what kind of coffee you want to use. As we baristas know, you do your research, you do your cupping, you do your brewing, you do your recipe. So maybe small tip for baristas, whenever you do coffee cocktails and that your dialing and your spec should be a little bit different because the coffee is not the final product as a beverage coffee on its own. It's one of the ingredients, it's one of the modifiers for the cocktail. So of course, your extraction's gonna be different, your yield gonna be different, et cetera. If you would do like a normal, let's say 22 in, 44 out, or you do your normal Golden Cup standards for brewing, the coffee itself will be too weak to be used in a cocktail. Once you put alcohol, ice, and you shake it, perhaps it will get lost, it will get diluted. So I'm always trying to explain baristas that you need to step out of your comfort zone and whatever you believe is the best, because you have to treat coffee as ingredients, not as a final product. So probably you have to increase your dose and decrease the yield without making it burned, as you said, bitter or over extracted. So it's not easy, but you have to learn that, and you have to understand the flavors of the coffee first. There are so many bartenders, my colleagues, I get their coffee and they were like, this tastes like lemon, so acidic, Italians especially. and I'm like, yeah, but what kind of lemon? Doesn't it smell like bergamot, for example? It's citrus too. And he's like, oh yeah, you're right. Yeah. Okay, so you said it's acidic, but what if I tell you there is a sweet acidity? What about like blood orange? Oh, you're right. Wow. You know what I mean? We have to open up the doors and open up their brains and minds and accept that a coffee is it's a fruit, it should taste, like that. It shouldn't be just a bitter than ashtray. So that's are the learning steps, I would say. Treat coffee a bit differently, study the coffee, and focus what your guests in your locations like.
Do you have a coffee where you say I would recommend that for people that start doing coffee cocktails?
So usually this formula kind of works for me, and I'm mentioning all these as well in the book. In the end, there are coffee tips and tricks in the back. Usually, what works the best for me, whenever I shake cocktail with ice and I'm using a shaker, it's better to use espresso because it's stronger, it's emulsified with lots of oils and it has a foam, and it's kind of work better when I shake it. So think about espresso martini. Whenever I do a cocktail which is a built or stirred, I would say a filter coffee or cold brew coffee works better. Now, whenever I use a fresh citrus or kind of aromatic elements or floral elements, I prefer coffee which is washed processed coffee or fermented and something funky, right? Something light, something, we know, like washed Kenya, whatever. But whenever I do something more where I'm looking for like more sweetness, chocolatey, nuttiness, stone fruits and berries, and I want something like that for my Irish coffee to pair with the whiskey, I would go for naturally processed coffee or honey processed coffee. And this is something what might not always work. This is not like a written in stone and it's the truth, but this is something what generally works for me and always worked for me in the competitions.
I have a weird question because I've been asked this a lot going at, or I have the luxury that I get invited for coffee seminars, coffee cocktail seminars. There's bartenders and they always seem to struggle a lot with espresso machines or with espresso making in general. What do you think about capsule machines for the bar?
Yeah, go for it. I mean, it's the best
Right?
inventions. It's the best inventions in the wheel. Honestly, oh my God, make it a lot easier. There are so many, specialty capsules, sustainable capsules, etc., which will give you, okay, not the best result, but decent result, which you can use in your cocktails. It's maybe 20 times cheaper than normal coffee machine. You don't have to have a barista. You don't have to have a space for it. It's small. It's practical. Hell yeah. Why not? I'm not one of those specialty coffee snobs who will tell you, no, no specialty, no instant, no, the fuck off. The problem with specialty coffee is it's so distant from normal people. We should bring specialty coffee to the bars, to the kitchens, to the offices, to the home where my mom, gonna drink specialty coffee. We need to bridge that gap. And I'm saying, yes, why not?
Because I think for a normal bar setup, you should need a an excellent filter coffee machine.
Like in my bars, we have a coffee machines and filter machines. We have a Mocha Master. I'm just saying.
I
We
believe
using.
it's pink, isn't
Yeah, it
it?
is pink. You're right. Yeah, it is pink. It is pink. We're using only the best. But of course, in my capacity, we can afford that because I have that knowledge and passion, and my team members as well. But like in any other bars, if you really don't know where to start and you don't have a space and barista knowledge, yes, why not? Why not to make your life easier? Use a cold brews, use a capsules, but make sure always the quality is there. They are specialty roasted from your local, neighbors, and let's partner up with local people because as bartenders, we work so closely with the chefs. We should start work closely with baristas as well, and winemakers and tea makers and etc.
Exactly. I love that. Thank you. Because I thought, I was always standing there being like, I think I really like capsules because I used to work for a company and they made capsules and I drank it. I'm like, this is actually really good. And most of the capsules that you can buy from specialty coffee shops are made of, or at least here in Berlin, I don't know if it's international, but they're made of a certain type of mixed with wood. You don't taste it at all, but they dissolve in within 3 minutes after using them in this tray, so you don't have any waste, or you don't have this aluminium waste or stuff like this, which is amazing. Martin, next question. What is your favorite coffee cocktail?
It's not espresso martini, unfortunately, because I had it so because I had it so many times made wrongly and I got kind of sick of it. So it is not espresso martini. Oh my God, this is tough. Oh, okay, I would say Irish coffee. Irish coffee. Yeah,
That's
this is
interesting.
beautiful combination of the cold cream and warm bottom, and I love whiskey, more than vodka. So yeah, I would say Irish coffee.
See, I'm always so I find it really interesting because I approach cocktail making obviously really differently from you because I'm a chef. I don't work in a coffee in a cocktail bar. I have no ideas about mixing drinks. I just see a recipe. I usually find one ingredient or one idea that I like get hooked on, and then I try to build the recipe around this. And my coffee knowledge is so extended that I'm like, oh yeah, I know which coffee I'm gonna use. But I personally love sours. I'm just obsessed with sours, and I can't get enough of them. So yeah.
Do you think sour work with coffee, like
Oh,
coffee and lemon? Yeah.
let me tell you. I've made a smoked coffee margarita with, do you know this little red spice? It's called tajin.
Tagine from Morocco or Mexico or something like that.
Mexico. So it's this
Yeah.
orange salt that tastes a little bit like salt and lemon and paprika,
Yeah.
and everything is super fresh. This on top, and you use like cold brew liqueur and added smoked lemon juice. And oh, I am
Interesting, because
telling you.
our best-selling coffee cocktail, one of the best-selling coffee cocktails, maybe Sammy, is a tropical coffee margarita.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah,
And it's, you
amazing.
know, like fresh citrus, tequila, a bit of mango,
Salt.
passion fruit. Salt, coffee. And people love that because it's not heavily coffee. And there is like this hint of coffee. And that's, I think, what people like a little bit more nowadays, you know, sort of like hint of it, not like straight out there in your face like you would have it in a competition. And that's what we have to learn. Whenever you do coffee cocktail for competition and your guests, it's a completely different game, you know, because your guests are not, you know, the best judges in the world with their coffee taste, you know.
Exactly. Maybe that's a good suggestion for everyone who's like thinking about creating coffee cocktail. Just, I think it's important to not just look at the standards, to not just say like, I'm gonna make an espresso martini and Irish. Although they're both really beautiful drinks, to be fair. But I think it is so easy to take maybe your favorite drink or the favorite drink of your house and then tweak it a little bit
Twist, tweak
coffee-ish.
it, yeah,
Yeah.
100%.
Do you think that competition cocktails, because competition cocktails sometimes are,
Undrinkable.
they shouldn't be difficult to make. They're undrinkable, excuse me, they're delicious.
If you give this to like a regular guest, they'll say, no, of course they're delicious for us because our palate is developed. But yeah, the level of difficulty, you know, and that commercial aspect of it, you know, like the point saying, like it's good to make two portions on the stage, right? In 10, 15 minutes time, but try to make two portions in a busy bar or coffee shop. Oh my God. Like, for example, I don't even shake my espresso martini because we don't have a bloody time for it. We use blender, like a frappe machine, you know what I mean? So, like, it's not a cutting corner, it's just being a smart. But what happening, of course, the technology in the future, AI, you know, it's supposed to help us. So of course I cannot shake that fast and that well as the machine would do it as a frappe machine, perhaps. You know what I mean? So the aeration, the foam and everything is it's way faster, way better. So make your life easier because in real life, you know, people they don't want to wait 10 minutes for your cocktails.
I love that because that's because I'm not a bartender. That's what I did on stage because I'm like, I've got no bloody time. I used to blend out on stage and people were like, what is she doing? Whoa, worked very well.
Exactly.
And you also batch brew a lot of cocktails, right? Is that correct? Yeah.
We're batching all the ingredients, and people are like, oh, it's already pre-made. Yeah, by us, when we are closed, there is no one around. We're using scales and thermometers, and everything is perfectly batched. If I would do this a la minute in a busy bar, of course, it's gonna taste different. So, of course, we make life easier, but that gives us more opportunity to spend time to interact with the guests, give them hospitality, tell them a little bit more, etc., etc. So, yeah.
Do you have a trend drink for 2022?
Yeah, you know what? You are like every journalist I spoke with in last month. What are the trends for 2022? I tell you my answer. Sorry, yeah, but I tell
I'm
you my
called a
answer.
journalist.
You are now. You are a blogger and journalist. I tell you now, I don't follow the trends. I want to create the trends, and that's pretty much sum up for 2022. I think the trend will be coffee cocktails. Yeehaw. Let's hope.
Let's hope, yeah. I mean, it's a long way. We're getting there.
Yeah.
We're on it. I think we're getting
Well,
also more attention over the years.
yeah, better than 10 years ago, you know.
Yeah, I think if you compare it, yeah. So it's slow but steady. We've already talked for a long time, so I want to not discard one of the questions that I've wrote down. It's very dear to my heart and very important for myself, as you are
Okay.
on a podcast that's called She's the
Yeah.
Barista. I want to talk a little bit about equality. How well are women represented in the bartending scene?
Not enough, not well enough. It's still very bad. Like, there are massive changes and there are some positive changes happening around the world, but I think it's not what it should be. It's a big problem. It's a big problem. And us and my business partners, as one of the leading bar operators here in Australia, we're really trying to promote that and highlight that issue. But sometimes, people are like, oh, you should have a female bartender. Oh, you should have, more female bartenders or more female chefs and baristas. The problem sometimes is demographics. It's not that we don't want to, but whenever we open application for position, we never get a female's applying for a job. So then we have to ask ourselves, where is the problem? Maybe probably somewhere else. Maybe they feel intimidated. So how we can make their how we can persuade them to apply for a job. Like maybe in Germany you have more female baristas and bartenders compared to Australia. It's just for some reason there are not enough of them. And they are already all good female bartenders, for example. They're all taken. They already have amazing job as a bar managers and venue operators. So there are not enough of them which we can work with. So example for maybe Semi Group, our bars, it's just a matter of a human force. We don't have enough female workers here in Australia. And I believe we should have more, and I can't wait to open the borders and get more. Because honestly, I love to work with the female bartenders and baristas because their sense for hospitality is different, their taste buds are different, their opinions are different, and that's what makes our industry better. It's because of you.
But, I mean, you are also like an employer. So is it possible that it might be because it's just hard to plan a life and be a professional bartender because, as soon as you want to have a family life, that basically is the end of your career.
Yeah, I
Like,
mean,
what would you as a as a as an employer do for your like female staff to not fear this, to not feel threatened by this idea?
a family and your choice of a private life and direction in life, it's your choice and you should respect it and support it. I think, if there will be a case which we didn't have, but if one of my female employees would decide to leave on a maternity leave, perhaps. And I know that the employees is, dedicated and it's great and love this job. For me, the doors are always open. Even after 1 year, a year and a half break, I would like that person come back. For me, a child or a family is not an obstacle in the career. And if that person need to shift the hours and suddenly from a nighttime person become a morning person, I would more than happy to adjust those hours and make the life of that employee easier. I had recently one of the examples happened in my coffee shop. I had an employee and she was struggling with the hours in the morning as a barista. She wanted to focus more on her mental health and kind of a exercising. So rather than working 5 days, she's working 3 days because those 2 days she's spending on her, exercises and studying about, nutrition and stuff like that. And, she's happy and I'm happy. And those 3 days, she really give her best because she has enough time to focus on herself. So it's really about, conversation between you and your employees and make sure that their life is good. Because if your private life is not good, then you're going to struggle in your work life, The most important is what's happening outside of work. And I need to make sure that all of my employees equally, they have a good quality lifestyle outside of work. And we're trying to provide that, from the salaries, from enough day off, from enough care from our side, because we really care about them. We give them calls every day. We ask how they're doing, even during lockdown. Do you need anything? I have one bartender now in isolation. I ask him, do you want me to buy groceries and things like that? Because I do genuinely care, you know? So for me, it's not an obstacle if a female bartender or hospitality worker decide to take a break for her private matters, because if someone is really good and is interested in the job, they always can come back.
Martin, we need more Martins, please. We need more Martins as like in the world to actually communicate and to actually like take care, because that's what you have. You have like responsibility for the people that work for you. And they're
And
not just.
that's what we're forgetting, you know, because we're giving hospitality so much to others, to our guests. We're forgetting to give hospitality to ourselves and our colleagues and partners and peers and employees. You know what I mean? We're focusing so much on giving to the guests, but let's give to each other. When was the last time you asked your colleague, how are you? Genuinely, how are you? Can I make a drink for you? Would you like to go for dinner? You know what I mean? That's what we're forgetting. Let's start with ourselves, with our colleagues, with our team members, and then we can give to the guests.
Beautiful. What are your goals for the future? Do you see yourself as a man who has finally come to the point where you're not empty and you
No,
feel like you've
no.
reached it?
Oh, there's so much I want to do. So I believe in upcoming years we will see my brand as a bar brand, as a maybe semi or semi junior, growing internationally.
Ooh.
I aspire to open a few or one more venue outside of Australia. I aspire and believe to publish one more book.
Also about coffee cocktails?
No, but connected to hospitality.
Beautiful.
I personally, as a marketing, like would like to see myself in a TV in some sort of way.
Shut up.
Yeah,
Oh, we have
because I
the
think
same goal.
what a coincidence. So yeah, I would say yeah, and genuinely just be happy as I am, and you know, maintain that happiness I have and energy, and luckily be still healthy as I am, and yeah, this is pretty much it for next upcoming year, so let's see.
I love it. Let's make a TV show together.
Yeah. Perfect.
Oh my God, this would be a catastrophe. Oh, Martin, it's been way over an hour.
Yeah.
And I'm so pleased with everything we talked about. I
Me
mean,
too.
you are incredible person. I think I've, yeah. Kissed your ass enough in this conversation, because you're one of those people that really wanted to have on the podcast, because you definitely changed the way that I approach hospitality. And it's so rare to have this in your life, to have this point where you're like, oh, I think I really like want to be like this person. And it's not that I've been regular at your space. It's been like these two or three interactions, and I've seen the drive and I've seen the creativity, and every single time since then, when I went on stage or when I went into the Brewers Club, I'm just like, I am not the best brewer. I am not a farmer. I am not an engineer. I am a human being. And I think what I can give is customer service. And I have this because of you. And it got me so far, actually.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for that. Thank you for giving this spark and this inspiration to so many people, and for being just the most incredible ambassador that Coffee Ingots Spirits has ever had. You are truly representing the symbiosis of coffee and of alcohol in such a charming way, where
Thank you, Nicole. That's very
thank you
kind of
so
you,
much. Yeah.
and yeah, I really appreciate you inviting me for this podcast, and I hopefully people will take something from it. And yeah, it doesn't matter where you are in the world, which stage of your life, or what career you have, and I think we can always learn and strive for better. And first of all and foremost, we should never forget how to be humans, as you said, you know, to be real humans. So I appreciate that, and I'm very glad that you're doing what you're doing and you're spreading those messages around the world. So big thanks to you, and yeah, can't wait to see you soon.
Yeah,
Hopefully.
are you coming? Is it possible for you to leave Australia? You don't know yet, right?
I don't know
For
yet, but
Vassar?
I'll do my best.
Well, I'm just hoping that I can be on the
And I hope I can be there cheering up for you as you did for me in 2017. Simple as that. Okay.
How can people reach you? Now that we've talked so much about you, tell us all of your contact details. Tell us where to visit you if there's people from Australia and from Sydney listening to this podcast. Now the stage is all yours, Martin.
Yeah, so hi guys, if you want to visit me and enjoy some of the cocktails, coffee, or hospitality here in Sydney, you can come to see me, maybe Sammy Junior or Dean and Nancy, one of those free venues. I'm always around. Around the world, well, when the borders opens again, you're probably gonna see me everywhere. I'm gonna take a big road trip and to promote my book and what I do. Meantime, please don't be strangers. The social media is a great device for connecting people. So please go to Instagram, check me out, send me a message if you have any questions, and yeah, let's become friends.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Martin. I
Thank you, Nicole. Thank you very much.
feel like I have to let you go now. I don't want
Yeah,
to.
I have to work. I have to work.
Okay, it's been a pleasure having you. Thank you so much. And
Thank you.
I'm sure we'll hear a lot about you and from you, and we'll definitely see you somewhere around the world this year.
Likewise. Auf Wiedersehen.
Auf Wiedersehen!
Bye.
At this point, I would like to thank Rancilio Germany for supporting this podcast. And for me, this episode was really important because, as I've mentioned more than enough, Martin for me was the person that I met, and it really turned my inner switch. And I think that it is so important to have this experience in your life. And he taught us a lot. He taught us to never get comfortable, to stay curious, to stay kind, to inspire, and to go out and to get inspired. Get out of your comfort zone and visit the world as much as you can. We can all change the world, and sometimes that means changing another person's mindset or view or energy or anything else, and then person after person, we will actually make a difference. Even if sometimes we think in just making coffee or just making cocktail, it is not important enough. I truly think it is. Thank you so much for listening. And if you have any questions, just reach out to me on my website, nicolebutterfeld.com, or on my Instagram channel, which is nbutterfeld. And a little information for next week. Next week, we'll have a small break, because this is a perfect opportunity for you guys to re-listen to some of the other episodes. Did you know that Andrea Allen did a quite polarizing WBC routine? And did you know that Esther Bright is one of the UK's only female technicians for espresso machines? Or that Charlotte Mullava has an amazing and eloquent way of describing how men and women are equal and should be seen as such? There are 14 episodes with amazing coffee people. Tune in and hear you next time.